SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Tampa Bay Downs, Oldsmar, Florida. A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207. As I watch a exercise rider dealing with a ponying basically an unsaddled horse that having a lot of trouble. It's a busy morning actually out here on the racetrack, busiest of the 3 days. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999, and at our website, stevebick.com. And Tampa Bay Derby Day is upon us. We got a lot of handicapping to do here. And Twin Spires weekend preview. That'll include all your favorites. Brad Free's going to join us early, and we'll talk about Santa Anita. We'll start with Santa Anita, actually, because it is the Dave Grenning and I were together last night. We went to the Yankee game at Steinbrenner Field down by the airport. Did not realize that Raymond James Stadium, that it's kind of a stadium complex. We had fun. Based on what we saw, I wouldn't be too excited about the Yankees. at least their second tier support, some of their minor league. It was they you can't hit the cutoff man. You're in for a long season. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, three different times. I think it was the first thing they taught us, and Pony Colt and Little League. I was hitting the cutoff man, but we had fun. We had really, really pleasant. And I hadn't been to a spring training game in ages. And I'll tell you one thing: it's gotten crazy. A real quick aside here. Years ago, my fantasy, two different fantasy leagues, and we used to have like a spring meeting, and when we would draft, and this goes back to the mid '80s. I mean, we literally started in '84, and we would come to Clearwater, we go to Kissimmee pretty often, and then also we wouldn't always come to Florida, but when we would go to spring training games, and we went to Bradenton and Clearwater and I remember, and Plant City for the Reds. And, you know, the facilities were, I'm just realizing as I say this, late 80s. So it's, you know, 35 years ago. The facilities were, you know, they were like bleachers and, you know, if it happened to be a Florida State minor league team, it would be a modest little stadium. Now it's these miniature, it's not the little Yankee stadium, but it's a full-fledged stadium, and tickets $49. When we went, I think it was like $6 or $8 maybe to go see a minor a spring training game. And then Dave and I, we said, the Phillies are in town, in Clearwater today. And so we thought, you know, maybe go see them. I go to look up the tickets were $150. It's a spring training game. Crazy. Anyway, that was the revelation that came to us yesterday. I brought Dave to Robert's Barbecue up in Port Richey, which is quite something. So we had a great pregame at Robert's Barbecue. Anyway, Brad Free is going to start us off because the Santa Anita action is very good. We'll talk to Hammer later. And the stakes at Santa Anita are part of an all stakes coast to coast. Nick Tamaro. Nick's going to be at the end of the show today. Nick is like a rook on the chessboard. He's all over the place, but he's taking a car in for service this morning. So he said, "Can I go late?" I said, "Sure." So he'll be the last voice you hear, Nick Tamaro. there's the Silks Run and the Hurricane Birdie at Gulfstream. Starts at 4:06 is the Silks Run, and then the Hurricane Birdie, and then the three stakes at Santa Anita, which go off at 6, 6:30, and 7. The Santa Isabel, the San Simeon, and the Beholder Mile. So fun, all stakes. I was a little surprised the cross-country, the NYRA-hosted cross-country, and they've used Tampa. I was really surprised. They're not utilizing the Tampa stakes portion. They're tied into Oaklawn tomorrow. Aqueduct 7 and 8, and then Oaklawn 8, 9, 10. All right, so Nick is going to do this, the stakes run. And so we'll get two passes, and actually between Nick and Brad and Hammer. So you'll hear three versions. And, of course, Hammer, don't let me forget to acknowledge Hammer with the very good push for everybody going back to last weekend on Subsanador. That was Hammer was 100% right. He did everything but hit the wire first. Unbelievable. Scully will swing through after Brad and before Marcus Hirsch. We'll do a game plan with Marcus. I think this will be fun. You know, whenever we do Tampa, we reach for Barry Spears. And not only are you going to get Barry, but you're going to get Chuck and Barry, not Chuck Barry. Although it just occurs to me that that's very funny. Chuck Barry, how that escaped my predilection for for wordplay and mirth. Yeah, Chuck and Barry. Chuck Barry at 10:30. Dave Granick will be here in person as well at 11, and we'll go through it with Dave. And we were talking, you know, yesterday we were talking a lot about the races and the two turf stakes for fillies and for fillies and mares. You know, we went over the Florida Oaks extensively with Jeff Franklin yesterday, which I'm sure you just might have been listening to, and then that Hillsboro. This is March. I mean, to have this level of a talent assembled, and I mean, how much? What is the purse in here? $225,000. I mean, it's fine. It's grade two and all that. But I mean, this is fluffy socks, market segmentation, elusive princess, Star Fortress, Aspen Grove. Dave mentioned, and I'm just thinking as I see her name, Beechnut Trophy is coming out. You can scratch the five out of there. So still a field of seven, and you know, five of which are graded stake winners. So Hillsboro is going to be great. The Florida Oaks, and you know, Tampa Bay Derby. We'll see. I'm anxious to hear people's opinions. One thing that you know, the Weaver Maiden, Weedon Maver, the Maiden to me is one of the must uses, at least underneath. I don't know if he can win, but he's faced good horses and gets Junior Alvarado, and there's a lot to like about Sturdy at 8-1. Obviously domestic product to me, who did not go favored at least on the morning line. He's 8-5. No More Time 7-5. I think that'll be reversed. Domestic product will go favored. So there's a lot to like about the card. Then who else? Hammer, as mentioned, and Nick. There we go. Oh, and I got to get to Welsh. I want to get Mike's. We did a lot of review with Mike early in the week at Gulfstream, but I do want to get his opinions on the Silk Run and the Hurricane Birdie. All right, that'll help I think people for. And there's a good. I think the second race is a very good turf allowance too, where I thought an 8-1. I did. We're going to trust the process. Cherie's got one in there in that second race. First level allowance going a mile and a 16th on the turf. Brian Lynch, Oscar's World, Graham Motion. Spoke to Graham Motion yesterday. Has got Edgatown for you Vineyard fans. And beyond Stoke Lynch as well. But Oscar's World and Edgartown are the two faves and clear players. But the process, 8-1, caught my eye. Anyway, so figure Welsh in here somewhere. Let me make sure I write this down. Otherwise, I have a tendency. Yeah, you know how it gets. A couple of quick news stories before we get to Brad Free. And just in time to face the wrath of and wrath might be a aggressive word. HISA is hosting another one of the town halls that they conduct. And they will address questions about the authority in general and the anti-doping and medication control and racetrack safety programs. Lisa Lazarus is going to host, and Ron Moquette and Dale Romans, two of the most affable and approachable horsemen in the country, and members of the advisory panel, the Horsemen's Advisory Group. They will be part of this Q&A and this interchange, and you can register for it and submit questions. And we'll see how they handle the questions. And obviously, after yesterday, I mean, if you were just listening in the last half hour, when we were able to reach Rusty Arnold, hours after, the news, as it were, or the, certainly the release of his statement that was distributed through the HBPA. The response and the reaction by reasonable people and by people who actually understand the mechanics of the game has been, of course, predictable, as we expected yesterday when we had Rusty join us. Somebody who is as close to having a perfect record in a long career, and you heard him, I specifically asked him, Rusty, what any other, violations in the course of, what other medication overages, et cetera. He's had two in over 40 years. I would think that that's about as pristine a record as anybody could possibly accrue. The thought that a Rusty Arnold is the kind of trainer that HISA and Haiwu is exposing is just an embarrassment. And I'll tell you what else is an embarrassment is social media that equates anything with attempts to cheat, and the pretzel twisting to try to turn this into Rusty Arnold takes an edge, that's precious. Yesterday was really a red letter day for the internet yahoos. It really distinguish themselves. It's uncanny. Situation in New York that the only reaction should be for concern and care for Leah Giamatti and self-care, and leave it to Horsey Twitter to get that wrong as well. It's just amazing, and the longer the more that these episodes The more they occur, the more you just have to, not have to conclude, but at least partly determine that a lot of the malaise that people, you know, characterize with the industry is thanks to the social media landscape. And Sean Clancy, to his everlasting credit, Sean Clancy has said this for the last several years. And is 100% right. I mean, I understood what he was saying, but the realization is that if there's a miasma, it's thanks to just an unending din of negativity and smears and attacks, and it is utterly, I mean, I'd like to say it's unnecessary. I mean, that goes without saying, I would think, but it's contributing to, you know, the air of hopelessness that isn't reality. And Dave and I were talking about this last night, in fact. So I'm not going to dwell, but you know, Monday, 4:30 p.m. HISA town hall, and Lisa and Dale and Ron will take your questions, and we'll see what form it takes. Want to send out sympathies to the Parsons family. Bill Parsons, saw yesterday that Mark Henning passed the word that Mr. Parsons had passed, and I guess about 10 days ago. And he was 81, and it's one of those people you see, you know, all the time at the racetrack, and forever. Really personable, and a great sportsman, a longtime client of Mark's, and a big family, his wife Terry, his children and grandchildren. So thoughts to everybody, and I'm sure next time we get a chance to talk to Mark, maybe I'll probably see him at the sale. Maybe we'll get Mark to say a few words about Bill Parsons. All right, that's enough of. Let's get into some handicapping, and that'll cheer us. There is word that there's a chance here late tomorrow for rain, but I think we're okay. You know, through the majority of the day, and we'll get an update on that as we go. All right, let's get Brad in here and get started on conversations, because there's some Derby Watch work to do first with Brad. We'll get some reaction from him about last weekend. And Brad Free joins us now. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I have some great news for anybody who's been wanting to wager on Southern California racing this winter. The rain has finally relented. It's over and done with. We had our last final little rainstorm yesterday afternoon, and the skies are clear, and the forecast for the immediate future is bright and sunny. So that's great news in a winter that has been unbelievably wet. It has, dampened business. The field sizes at the Santa Anita Winter Meet, the average field size is 7.0. It's been a tough slog through a wet winter season. But the good news is it looks like spring may finally have arrived. So that's great news. And I'm, you know, in hindsight, I'm glad that they pushed the big cap from last Saturday to Sunday. It made for a very nice afternoon of racing. Four graded stakes races last Sunday, postponed from Saturday, and three more graded stakes races this weekend that will be run, we expect, on Fast and Firm. So the weather, at least, is looking good in California.
Well, that is good news. I saw somebody post yesterday, there was, I guess, a passing shower. I saw the Palazzo there at the green and tan tiles taking a pounding. But I totally agree, Brad, about Sunday. And, you know, after the big day at Gulfstream on Saturday, it really made it fun, to have a focus. I didn't look at the handle numbers, but I thought it was a terrific option. And we were kicking around with Hammer, too. The idea that, maybe the big cap goes back to a Sunday. I know that the handle's just never as good on Sundays as it is on Saturdays.
No, it's not. And in fact, Matt Hegarty wrote a story about that. I think it's probably still posted online. And he talked about, the decline in handle. It was not a great day business-wise, which was a little surprising considering that Santa Anita was kind of the focus of the country. Sunday, you would expect handle to be a little bit more, but Saturday is when the money comes in. Sunday business tapers off, and I think that the Santa Anita, handle figures would reflect that, and Matt wrote about that. At any rate, it was a fun day of racing. We saw some very good performances by a couple of nice grass horses, DeJour and Ruby Nail. The big cap was, I was chuckling listening to you earlier talking about Subsanador. I thought the big cap was so wide open that I took a shot with Subsanador, and, at the eighth pole, I thought I was home, and then here comes Newgate. And the thing that's frustrating, I'm glad that the long shot that I bet on fired, but I'm an idiot at the same time because Newgate was a contender. I think, a logical contender in the field. And the Exacta came back $45. So that was a wasted opportunity by me. But anyway, it was a wide open race. It was a good, solid race. Newgate won. He was best. Subsanador, he showed the form that was expected of him when he made his U.S. debut. He ran well and kind of overlooked in the whole deal is Reincarnate, a very solid third place comeback by him. And he's going to be an important player in the older male division this year. Baffert's loaded not only with three-year-olds, but also with older males. The disappointment in the race, obviously, was Newgrange, who may have displaced in the race. Phil D'Amato wasn't quite sure as of earlier this week. That was reported by Steve Anderson. And Salesman, who ran poorly, he did not run to his workouts. And trainer Dick Mandela early this week was still kind of searching for an alibi. But Newgate and Subsanador did not need an alibi. It was an exciting big cap with a couple of good horses hitting the wire almost together.
You and Hammer 22-1, and Hammer was live in some multis, and I heard from him. I mean, seconds they hadn't pulled up, and Hammer was Hammer was crying at that point. It was a good big cap, and of course part of a natural hat trick for the Baffert Barn. DeJour, I asked Baffert on Monday if DeJour was the best turf horse that that he's had, and he basically said recent memory maybe, but he said going back he had some good ones, but this horse has been really nice for him and for Debbie Lanny and Jill Baffert, and gets a grade one win, had grade one placing, but he was much the best.
Well, he was much the best. He went, 1 mile in 33.4, actually 33.95. An impressive win with a nice ride by Pratt, and DeJour was best. We've said this before, the California Turf Division is a little lacking in depth. It was, a decent field of eight, and as long as there aren't any shippers that show up, I think we're going to see, this same similar group, DeJour, Easter, Goliad's always the horse to catch in these types of races. But until, you know, the Europeans and or East Coast horses come out, this is going to be the turf mile division. And I'm sure we'll see a similar type of rematch in the Shoemaker Mile a little bit later on this this season. But DeJour, you know, for a, he hadn't started since the early since November in the Breeders' Cup. This was his first start of the season. And so he's a fresh horse heading into the season. Baffert, he probably told you guys this, that he thinks DeJour is a better horse this year, you know, that than previous. So it'll be interesting to see how good he is this year. And at least out in California, he's the top dog, and we'll find out if he's good enough to take on International Company later on in the year.
The San Felipe and the two Bafferts put on a show. Scatify was a little out of control in this spot, and McVeigh's still a work in progress, but imagination and wind me up, nice low 90s buyers or mid 90s buyers, and they'll go on to whatever assignments, you know, beyond pre and post Derby that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it was a good race by a couple of, you know, improving three-year-olds. I was a little surprised that the number came back as good as it did, Imagination and Wind Me Up. Of course, Scatify was eliminated on the first turn. You know, he things got a little tight for him right after the break. Wind Me Up, his jockey Juan Hernandez pretty much sent him from the gate, and that made things a little tight on Scatify. He came out, he knocked Imagination sideways, and that was basically it for Scatify. Imagination took off under Dettori, and to his credit, he still had something left to win the race by a head. The interesting horse in this race is McVeigh, because he's a maiden, okay? We know that. He also has 19 qualifying points for the Kentucky Derby. If he runs back in the Santa Anita Derby, and I don't know if trainer John Sheriffs has plans to do that or not, but let's say he does run back in the Santa Anita Derby and hits the board. He'll have 44 qualifying points, and this year that might be enough to make the field. So there is at least a scenario out there in which John Sheriffs takes a maiden to Churchill Downs, McVeigh, and if he ever gets his act together upstairs in his mind, this is a good colt, and he's going to make some noise. But, you know, obviously Baffert can't run in the Derby this year, but this maiden, McVeigh, a third place finish or better in the Derby might qualify him. It'd be interesting to see what Sheriffs and owners Lee and Susan Searing decide when we get a little bit closer to that race. But in the meantime, Imagination's win validated May Moon, and Wind Me Up's runner-up finish validated Nisos. Both those colts, Imagination and Wind Me Up, finished behind their more well-regarded stablemates, and it kind of made those stablemates look a lot better. May Moon, Baffert's considering the Arkansas Derby with him. Nisos is expected to show up in the Santa Anita Derby. And let's just say they both win those. They win those two races. There's 100 points each that are off the table, that will not be awarded to any three-year-olds pointing for the Kentucky Derby. So even though Baffert can't run this year in the Derby, an unfortunate situation, but his presence in the three-year-old stakes races is going to influence who does make the field. And, you know, it's such a dominating stable. There have been 9 graded stakes in California open to males on dirt for foals of 2021, 9 of them. Baffert has won 8 of them. The only one he lost was when Booth finished second to Fierceness. So he dominates the three-year-old division, Baffert does, and he has an exceptionally deep roster this year, led by Nisos and May Moon. But Imagination will wind me up. You know, they're going to make some noise down the road as well.
Finally, last week, on Sunday, Ruby Nell did exactly what you would have expected, and 360 was a very acceptable number. Got me live to the nightcap, 5 horses, and still couldn't cash. When Get the Money, the Brian Coroner, was that? Who was it that beat me?
Yeah. That was Get the Money.
Yeah.
Brian Cole at $20.40, one of the bigger upsets on Big Cap Day. But regards to Rubinel, when she fires, she's very, very tough to beat. Maldonado let her do her thing on the front end, and she was gone. It always gets a little interesting in the final 16th. Is she going to hold? And she did by 3/4 of a length. Mufi ran well, finished second, rallied from behind to finish second, but there was no catching Rubinel, whose most recent start was super, and she replicated that performance on Sunday in the Buena Vista. And with the retirement of Closing Remarks, Rubinel is now, she's the number one grass billiard mare in California. I guess Anisette is on the comeback trail, so we'll see what she does against older this year. But at least for the time being, Rubinel is a very good filly by Bull Doro, and she won the Buena Vista. And like you said, $3.60. If you like to bet odds on favorites, there are worse propositions than Rubinel.
Well, and you went to my follow-up to the race and to the chart by bringing up Harris Farms' Closing Remarks. The Vronsky mare, Carla Gaines, had just tipped over $1 million in the megahertz with I think she got 500 for that. She gets another 500 here, so she made $1,820 in her career, which is great. Seven-time winner and really nice. The Goldakova and, was maybe just a cut under the grade one levels. I think that eluded her, but multiple graded stake winner and a very nice. Carla Gaines always has got at least one of these in the barn.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? And, she did a great job with Closing Remarks. You're right. She was just a cut below the grade one caliber grass fillies and mares, but she had an outstanding season last year. I believe she won 4 graded stakes this season, and they elected to bring her back this year at age 6. And it looked like it might be a good decision, because why not? They're racehorses. John Harris, one of the better horses that he has in training, for sure, Closing Remarks. But she just did not want to do it in either of her last 2 starts. I thought she had an excuse in her comeback. Sorry, I can't find one the other day. She was pretty flat, and they made the decision to retire her to become a broodmare. But a very nice grass mare, California bred, and they have a lot to be proud of. John Harris, owner, breeder, and trainer Carla Gaines.
Well, one of the advantages of the first quarter of the year, if you want to try this, is, if it doesn't go to plan, or if in this case it looks like she wants to be a mommy, you got plenty of time to breed her. So they'll bring her back to the farm and, maybe let the air out of the racetrack balloon for her. And we'll see what the mating plans end up with for Closing Remarks. Brad, before we talk about the weekend and the 3 stakes and some other good races on the card, how about some Derby Watch updates and your thoughts about what happened in New York and actually in at Turfway and, of course, at Gulfstream?
Yeah, let's start off with the most significant race, and that was the Gotham Stakes. And, we're in a situation right now where a horse can come in off a long layoff, score an impressive win going one turn in the slop, and all of a sudden he's number 3 horse on Derby Watch. I'm talking about Deterministic, and he was impressive, but the fact that we have him as high, David Aragona and myself have him this high on the list, I think it's indicative of the division right now. It just does not seem like a group of 3-year-olds that anyone has jumped up and taken charge of. Sierra Leone was impressive in his comeback. His highest buyer speed figure is 91. Timberlake, his highest figure is a 93. He's the number 2 ranked horse on Derby Watch. And Deterministic, he makes his debut on Derby Watch as the number 3 ranked horse. He was very impressive coming in off a long layoff for Chris Clement, who I don't think has started a horse in the Kentucky Derby yet.
Nope.
But the way that this horse ran and the way that he finished – this is the one. He was very impressive, and I thought that Just a Touch ran well to finish second. He's still a little bit green. He was kind of given a reminder at the top of the lane by his rider. He just kind of went kind of a grinding type of finish, but it was actually an okay runner-up finish for a colt that I think wants to run long. And the way that Deterministic finished, there's no doubt that he definitely wants to turn. So, yeah, Chris Kwan has a very nice three-year-old Deterministic, and in a wide-open year, we probably say this every year, Deterministic be on anyone's short list. As far as the Fountain of Youth goes, I don't know. I'm not so sure what to make of Dornock. He won the Remsen with the bias in his favor. He won the Fountain of Youth in a race that was decimated by scratches with no speed. But I don't think you can knock him for taking advantage of, you know, beneficial situations. He's good enough to do that. What did he prove the other day in the Fountain of Youth? I don't think he really showed anything that we didn't already know, that he's a good horse that can win a race given ideal conditions. I'm very curious to see how Dornock responds in a race with more pace, on a racetrack that's not speed favoring. He won the Fountain of Youth, but you can't get past the fact that that race was, you know, locked, was scratched. Speakeasy, who I think would have won the race, I think he would have gone wire to wire. He was scratched in the post parade. Victory Avenue, the highly rated maiden runner up, also scratched. It was not a deep Fountain of Youth. And, you know, for his first start of the season, Dornock did what was expected. He won the race. He did not win all that in a very fast time. He was late changing leads again. So he's still a work in progress, but he's a work in progress who's basically already qualified for the Kentucky Derby, and he has back-to-back graded stakes wins under his belt. So I wouldn't be too critical. I will be semi-critical. I think that Dornock is, you know, he's one of many in this division that has a look, you know, we're less than 2 months out. So he's on the short list for sure. And Arizona has him listed as the co-fourth choice at 15-1. So he's one of the ones. The day before the Fountain of Youth, by the way, Conquest Warrior was very impressive, winning an entry-level allowance. And I suspect that the Florida Derby will be next for him, and he'll get the acid test. He's a very impressive colt who overcame a ton of trouble in his maiden win, and he won clear the other day. The challenge for him is that his top buyer, I believe, is an 84, so he's not fast yet. Maybe he will be, and the way that he won the allowance race the other day, and he won geared down, but as with a career top of 84, he still has some things to prove in terms of, you know, how fast he really is. So those were the three main races. I know that they ran the Battaglia the other day. I think that things are going to get a lot tougher in the Jeff Ruby. That's the next race coming up at Turfway Park on synthetic. And a couple of California shippers are coming out for that race. Endlessly and Topolo, who ran 1-2 in the El Camino Real Derby up at Golden Gate Fields, they are expected to show up in the Jeff Ruby. So things are going to get a little bit tougher moving forward on synthetic in the Turfway Park, you know, their main Derby prep. Yeah, that's kind of a wrap. There's a lot of questions out there with regards to the three-year-olds. You know, Sierra Leone, he's the top-ranked horse on Derby Watch, but as of right now, he'd probably be my pick. I don't know, maybe Mystic Dan, who did run fast with the bias in his favor. Lots of questions to be answered over the next 2 months.
Well, and I'm glad you added those two names, because the interesting thing exiting the Battaglia is Encino and Epic Ride moving over for dirt runs. I'll tell you, the bluegrass is going to end up being, you know, that first Saturday in April. That's going to be the 800-pound gorilla of the final preps.
Yeah, and that's the race in which Sierra Leone is expected to make his next start in his final Derby prep. And I would expect him, you know, as of right now, he would probably be the favorite in the Bluegrass. Does he have to win the race? I don't think so. I honestly don't believe that Chad Brown, you know, is going to require a victory for Sierra Leone to move toward the Kentucky Derby, but he does have to run well, and I expect he will. His comeback was solid, and he should move forward. So that'll be a good race on April 6th. There's all kinds of good races on April 6th. The Wood is that day. So is the Santa Anita Derby, in which, you know, we expect to see NISO. So some good racing early April across the country.
Derby watch every week. Brad Free, David Aragona, and we'll probably check in with David next week. Brad, let's turn our attention to tomorrow at Santa Anita. I've been telling people about the Coast to Coast, which is an all-stakes version, the Silks Run and the Hurricane Birdie, the 9th and 10th at Gulfstream, and then the Santa Isabel, the San Simeon, and the Beholder Mile. Let me turn to there, Santa Anita. There we go. The Santa Isabel, I know, was being billed as Kinza and everybody else. I don't see it that way. The Kinza is obviously the favorite, but there's some fillies well within hailing distance.
I completely agree. She's the fastest horse in the race. She's probably the speed of the field. She's, the favorite on the morning line, and she's definitely the horse to beat. I picked her on top, but she faces a potential pace challenge from the filly right to her outside. She's a Tempest, who is adding blinkers, and I expect that she's going to show a little bit more speed, and if she does, her and Kinza, they could potentially hook up early. And if they do, number one, Ultimate Authority could get a great trip, saving ground right behind the speed. She's moving up in class from a highly rated maiden win. She's earned back-to-back 90s, Ultimate Authority has, and she has that versatile running style, so she can rally from behind. She's second choice, my second preference anyway. I would use her. I wouldn't put all my eggs in the Kinza basket, even though this is a race that in recent years has been pretty much dominated by favorites. Favorites have won 5 of the last 7 runnings of the Santa Isabel. Baffert has won the last 3. He'll probably win again tomorrow with Kinza. But at 4-5, that's the type of favorite I don't mind spending money to, in case she does engage in pace duel and gets beat. Because if you can knock off a 4-5 favorite in a multi-race wager, you're in a pretty good spot. But she is the horse to beat, Ultimate Authority, second choice. The horse I'm not really sure what to do with is Navy Bell, number 6, Navy Bell.
Yep.
As the co-second choice at 4-1, her debut was impressive, but it was only her debut, and it was a sprint. So now she's running long, facing winners. The manner in which she won suggests that Navy Bell might be a very good filly, and we're going to find out right off that in the second start of her career. Mark Glatt's going to bring her right back in the Santa Isabel. So those are the top 3, Kinza, Ultimate Authority, and Navy Bell. But, once you get past those, then you have to use a little bit of creativity. Where's My Ring is a maiden, but she finished only a half length behind Ultimate Authority last time out. She's a Tempest, is a contender on the front end if she can avoid a duel with Kinza. So there's a lot of ways to go. When all is said and done, maybe we're just overthinking it, because Kinza is the horse to beat.
I agree with everything you said, including Glatt with Navy Bell and Where's My Ring, a maiden. I mean, maidens are popping up in 3-year-old races everywhere. There's one here at Tampa to consider from George Weaver on the outside in this quixotic Tampa Bay Derby. The San Simeon's coming down the hill, and as always, we have fun. We love the hill course. One of the intriguing elements is 8-1 Ottoman Prince, Phil D'Amato, who's got away with these types, and some other familiar names involved here. Laneway makes the 7-year-old debut for Mandela and My Racehorse. Good old Iridio, part of this group, the San Simeon.
Yeah, no, it's a nice little stakes race coming down the hill, 6.5 on the hillside turf course. And Laneway and Air Force Red, they're both course specialists. Laneway started 4 times on the hill. He's won 2 and finished 2nd in a pair of graded stakes races. We know he likes the hill, and he has enough tactical speed to be forwardly placed and work out his trip. He hasn't started since early December, but Mandela said that he's training well and he expects him to run well. Laneway, he's the tepid favorite on the morning line, 3-1. I think he's the horse to beat, but this is a wide open race, and Air Force Red is very, very good. He's made 5 starts on the hill, won 3 of them, and, you know, he's earned some good numbers, but he's coming in off an extended layoff. He hasn't started since early June. Leonard Powell believes that he is ready to go. Air Force Red is ready to go. You know, that's always, a trainer can say one thing. It's up to a skeptical handicapper to, you know, reach his or her own conclusion. I'm always suspect when a horse is coming in off a long layoff at the start of the year in a race with, it's only $100,000, and, you know, they're going to be running for a lot more money this fall in the Eddie D. The same group of downhill turf sprinters will be running for $750,000. So I'm not sure if Air Force is cranked all the way. As for Ottoman Prince, I think you just have to put a big question mark next to him. And I think that Phil D'Amato is kind of doing the same thing. I spoke with D'Amato early this week. He's not sure if Ottoman Prince is a sprinter or a miler. So, you know, if you're not sure, this is the perfect spot in which to make his U.S. debut. He was purchased overseas for $180,000 at auction. He's trained, apparently, okay on dirt. It's very difficult to, you know, tell how a horse is doing, how a grass is doing, when his only workouts have been on the main track. So D'Amato believes he has him fit, and he's going to find out some things about Ottoman Prince on Saturday in the San Simeon. He's kind of the new shooter in the field. And then, of course, your favorite, Iridio, who scratched out of the kill row last week. He does not like soft ground, Iridio. I think that the turf should be firm tomorrow, by tomorrow afternoon. The sun is out, and we should be okay. Firm going, and that's what trainer Marcelo Polanco is looking for with Iridio. He needs firm ground. He doesn't like it. His family did not like it. And Iridio, if he can run back to that Clocker's Corner win, why can't he win again? The last 3 winners of the San Simeon all came out of the Clocker's Corner. The top 4 finishers from the Clocker's Corner are in the San Simeon field. This is a deep, deep field. I mentioned 4 of them. You could go a lot deeper in this race. But I think when all is said and done, the horse to beat, Laneway, making his first start since early December.
Mandela's also got Sumter coming back for that second start as a 5-year-old. And, you know, Brad, you and I both are Thoroughgraph users and fans. That Clocker Corner, and, of course, yesterday Jeff Franklin with us, and we did our Win Using Thoroughgraph segment. There's something very interesting about Sumter. And you know, the pace scenario he's funny of late. He can come from a little bit off the pace. He did in the Clocker's Corner, falling 2 lengths shy. But he had, Brad, as you can see, the narrowest of new tops. That 4.5 was the slightest new top. First start as a 5-year-old, and war fronts continue to get better with age. And I just wonder if Sumter isn't signaling that you know, there's more to come from him.
Well, I think he is, and so does his trainer, Dick Mandel. Not only was his comeback race his first start as a 5-year-old, it was his first start since he was gelded. And Mandela believes that he is an improved horse since being gelded. The Clocker's Corner, 3rd place finish, his first start as a G. It was his comeback race. He ran well. He came from, you know, farther off the pace than I think many of us may have expected, and he ran well. He was the beaten favorite. I get that, but so what? He ran well. It was his comeback race. Mandela believes that gelding him might have, you know, allowed him to turn the corner. And at age 5, making his second start as a gelding tomorrow, he is another contender in the wide open field.
I'm glad we brought him up. Let's talk about the Grade 1 Beholder Mile. This was one of our 2 Thoroughgraph races yesterday. And once again, we can have a centerpiece of Adair Manor, the 5-2 favorite, but there's plenty of contenders. And how about the first start under the Rapoli banner? Todd Pletcher sending Interstate Daydream out west. There's the emergent Sweet Azteca from Michael W. McCarthy. for Mrs. Zebarth. There's plenty to talk about. I didn't even mention Green Up, the other Pletcher for Team Valor. Good old Kirsten Bosch is here as well. Seems just a cut beneath, but it's a good edition of the Beholder Mile.
Well, it should be, because it's a grade one for fillies and mares. And, you know, when you put a grade one status next to a race for fillies and mares, you know they're going to show up. And Todd Pletcher sent a couple out here, Green Up and Interstate Daydream. Interstate Daydream was purchased for $1.4 million last fall. And Rapoli's going to keep her in training this year as a five-year-old. You know, her numbers are right there with everyone. Look, Adair Manor is the horse to beat. She was the top California California-based dirt filly last year, but this is her first start since the Breeders' Cup, and she's not going to get things her own way. Now, I know she does not necessarily require the lead, but when you go back and look at her, you know, 2023 campaign, she benefited by some pretty soft trips in several of those races. She won't get a soft trip tomorrow afternoon, at least we don't expect she will, because number six, Sweet Becca, I think, is the speed of the field, stretching out for the first time. And this was not any late, let's throw this filly in the field type of play by Mike McCarthy. He was thinking about the Beholder Mile even before Sweet Azteca won that one other than sprint in early February by 12 lengths. His quote at the time, and I'm just going to paraphrase, was, this should set her up for the Beholder Mile. Well, I'll say it does. A 12-length one other than win, and now she is razor sharp. She's fast. She trains and gallops and works like a filly who will stay a mile. And I think that she can, Sweet Azteca can be long gone. It looks like it's a, you know, kind of a daunting class hurdle from one other than to grade one route. McCarthy did the same thing 4 years ago with Cece, who nobody knew how good she was, except for maybe McCarthy. And she went from a one other than sprint win right into the Beholder Mile, and she won clear. So McCarthy's going to try to do the same thing with Sweet Azteca. I think that she can fill this race. Adair Manor, who I respect just by her campaign last year, she's five now. She should be as good as ever. But it's her first start in 4 months, and there won't be any easy leads. And then one of my favorites, is she rarely gets there. She did last time. Desert Dawn, who was repeatedly compromised by the pace scenario, chasing Adair Manor three times last year. She finally finished in front of her in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Desert Dawn, an Arizona bred, she shows up every single time. She'll be running late in a race that should unfold at a relatively, you know, legitimate tempo. It looks on paper, anyway, I don't know if this is the case or not, that Pratt had his choice between Desert Dawn and Sweet Azteca. I think he made the right decision. He's going with the speed horse. Antonio Frisou picks up Desert Dawn, and she'll be coming on late. I wish I had an opinion on the Pletcher shippers. They're obviously doing well, otherwise he would not have put them on a plane. But neither one of them have started since early November. I'm just not convinced that they have to come out here and, you know, defeat the locals. I'm not convinced that they can't do that either. If Adair Manor is going to get beat, this would seemingly be the situation in which, you know, as horse players, we can take a swing against the best filly in the race, only because she hasn't started since November and she's a short price. So I like Sweet Azteca to steal the Beholder Mile.
Excellent. Brad, this was fabulous. It's a very nice card, the three stakes. There's a couple of good maiden races earlier. I see that you made Prosper your best bet, the Sadler second timer for Talia and West Point. There's a 6.5 furlong maiden group that looks like there might be something good in here. Baffert's got the Firster, Winterfell, the $400,000 Arrogate for the Avengers, and drawing outside. But Mullins has got one, Uncle Mo's Gold, that's comes from a nice family. Glatt, who can do almost no wrong. Glatt first start stats, hitting at 24% for a $3.36 ROI.
That's pretty impressive. You know, that's what happens when a good trainer starts getting better stock. You know, trainers get saddled with the reputation, oh, he or she never wins with first-time starters. And then all of a sudden they start getting better stock, and they're running future stakes horses in maiden races. And that's, I think, the case with Glatt. His the quality of his stable has increased dramatically over the past couple of years, and he's finding himself with some very good horses running against maidens, and that's one reason why his stats have tipped, you know, ticked upward with regards to first-time starters. And he has a couple, and according to the stable notes, he said both are well met. I took the Baffert's 1-2. I mean, that's always the safe way to go. And I made a mistake. I took Canada Gate over Winterfell. I liked his workout the other day on video. And anyway, it's a good race. 3-year-old maidens going 6.5 in race number 4. Race number 3, the older maiden, second-time starter Prosper, he's going to be long gone. He's going to be a short price. I'll be surprised if he gets beat, assuming he handles turf as well as he did dirt first time out. So some good maiden races to support those three graded stakes. You're right.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won on Twitter. But Derby Watch and the pages of America's Turf Authority since...
A long time.
Since our stock answer is since Marty McGee was in short pants.
That was a long time ago.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad, good luck this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
I love it. Brad Free, everybody. And that, of course, was Priv's longtime answer. The right answer, Dave, 1894. There you go. Exactly. Dave Grenning in the house, everybody. let me get Scully in. We are going to have an unscheduled visit. Mark Guilfoyle is going to join us from HISA, and Mark wants to address the Rusty Arnold situation. So we'll talk to Mark in the next hour. We can anticipate that visit as well. Sometimes he's free after 10:15, so we'll get Mark Guilfoyle in this morning as well. Where am I? Scully. Let's get to Scully. We're actually falling behind, which, you know, has been known to happen around here. So bear with us. But we can always count on James to rifle through everything. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's Tampa?
It's a delight to come here. It's a whole different pace. It's a different environment. It's just such a, you know, quaint little track, and you relax when you come here. It's really nice. It's why people make it, you know, so many people make this an annual, you know, winter trip. They love Tampa Bay Downs.
Well, I would love to get there one day. You know, I went to Calder. I went to Hialeah back in the day with my parents and, Gulfstream many a time. So that's the one track I haven't been to before. Ah,
you absolutely got to get down here for a trip. All right. We'll make that happen next winter.
All right.
Because this is the big day tomorrow. Let me get a quick Kentucky Derby report from you. Some recapping what you discerned out of last week's preps.
Well, obviously, I mean, you've been a big talking point with all the scratches out of the Fountain of Youth. And I just think, you know, that race just, I don't know exactly what Dornick gets out of it. Don't expect to be in, you know, March exiting these big races with more questions than answers. And I just think at this point on the calendar, it's been more difficult to really formulate strong Derby opinions, than any year before that I can ever remember. The final preps are going to mean more than ever this year, seemingly, and they're going to really define who's going to be the contenders and, you know, perhaps help start these horses. I mean, I could look at Sierra Leone, and I respect the heck out of him, and he's the top-ranked Derby contender in America right now. But, you know, he's a deep, deep closer running who's raced on both starts in sloppy tracks, so he still has something to prove. And even in, you know, overseas with the Forever Young, I'm anxious to see this UAE Derby performance because I don't think he can win the Kentucky Derby being widest of all every single step. And until he takes some kickback, I think that's a legitimate question following the Saudi Derby with him. So, really with Dornick, they were going to try to raid in that race after two front running wins, a maiden win and the Remsen win. And it didn't work out because Victory Avenue and Speakeasy scratched. They went right to the lead. He ran slow early, controlled the slow. Pace was just goofing off on the far turn, let some overmatched long shot, who a 6 furlong maiden winner come up to him and challenge him and make Luis Saez go to a full ride, seemingly, on the far turn. And then, you know, he gets in the stretch and he starts goofing around again because he's just way better than those that group of horses. So, you know, to me, I still think Dornick is a very, very talented horse, but I just think he's so raw that, you know, I question whether he can run his best race in a race that has 20 horses in the first Saturday of May. And we'll find out in his next prep if he takes a step forward. As far as the Gotham, you know, I understand you've got these lightly raced horses and deterministic and just a touch. They haven't been two turns. They're coming off a sloppy track win. But the way they look to me in deep stretch, those horses look really talented. And I give them both a chance to be a factor this year. They got to prove it next time. But I came away super impressed by that race. You know, deterministic completely walked out of the gate in his debut and had to be, was Joel Rosario was riding him as hard as possible to avoid being 10 lengths behind early. And I thought that was a really good race to win that main special weight rallying real wide like he did. And he just showed, you know, he broke better. He raced up close. And he split horses in the stretch, and he looked like he was running his best part of the entire race going under the wire. I thought the same thing for the runner-up. I think they're both going to stretch out and be good at two turns. So I came away excited from the Gotham. As far as the John Battaglia Memorial, I think this Encino for Brad Cox, Nyquist colt, is a nice three-year-old right now. I liked his maiden win. I liked that John Battaglia performance. Obviously, he's got a bunch of questions to answer, too. But at least he's doing something right now. So those were my opinions on those races. As far as the San Felipe, I thought Imagination, you know, overcame trouble, looked good, flattered that Maimon, who had just beat him in an allowance race by a head. But he's got something going for him moving forward. Imagination does. So that's how I saw all four races, Steve. And we got the Tampa Bay Derby this Saturday. Then we'll have a week off, and then we'll get into the major qualifiers.
Absolutely. Well done. Let's turn our attention to the weekend and Tampa and Santa Anita, you know, the principal venues. But let's first take a quick gander at Twin Spires Actions. What's on the website?
Sure, we're doing, you know, at Twin Spires, we're doing a 15% profit boost on Kentucky Derby, you know, prep weekends at tracks. So this weekend, we're doing Tampa Bay Downs on all your winning win, exacta, trifecta, and superfecta wagers on the 12-race card. We'll give you a 15% profit boost on your winning on your winnings. We also have a Kentucky Derby bankroll booster for bets on the Tampa Bay Derby. We've got really good promotions going on at Turfway. We've got a win bonus there, a 15% win bonus every Friday evening. And we've got a winner money back special where if your horse runs second or third, it's like races on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll give you $10 back. And we've got some promotions coming up for Cheltenham and Australia and much more. So go to twinspires.com, the offers page, and make sure you opt in.
Well, Cheltenham on the horizon. Starting to look forward to it, as we always do. We'll get some Nick Luck perspective, as well as the one and only long shot lad, Kev Humphreys. We'll do plenty of Cheltenham. What are we looking
all right,
at?
Let's start right with Tampa Bay. I want to mention race number five, and then I'll give an opinion on a few of those stakes. Race number five is a 3-year-old filly maiden special weight on the turf at a mile, and I thought that on that Sam F. Davis undercard that Oversubscribed and Bell of Rights were both look like future stakes types to me. I thought they were both really ran well in that race. I like that Bell of Rights, her dam, she's Constitution Philly for Shug, her dam, full sister of Arizona, the Chad Brown Philly, Oversubscribed, really regally bred Philly as well. And number 12, Active, really ran a good third in that race. It's a gunrunner filly for Grand Motion. She didn't show a lot in a pair of starts last year. He brought her back on the synthetic. She ran okay in there, and she took a big step forward last time, Steve, against a nice pair of rivals. She's obviously going up against a pair of Chad Brown runners. you got to respect in here. But I was surprised to see her pegged at 12-1 on the morning line, active, and I like her chances in race five.
Very nice. 12-1 on the 12 horse, and Grand Motion, that's the fifth. The three-year-old filly's going a mile on the grass.
Yes, and then I'll mention the in the race number seven, the Columbia Stakes for three-year-olds at a mile on turf. I was a fan of Talk Talk last year. Really, I like that Kitten's Joy win at Colonial. He had a real trouble trip in the Bourbon, and that was a really good field, I thought. And he did come up a little bit empty in the Raiders Cup Juvenile, but, you know, ran okay to split the field in sixth. And now he's coming back in a spot that I think is favorable for him. I think he can open up his three-year-old season with a good showing for Grand Motion. So I like number nine, Talk Talk, in race seven.
You're on the Grand Motion bandwagon here.
Yes, yeah. And I'll get off it for the Hillsboro. Obviously, I mean, this is a dynamite race filled with a bunch of fillies and mares that are going to be competing in grade one races this year. So just dynamite addition. It is at a mile and an eighth. And I will point out, Fluffy Socks, she only has one win since October 2021. She won once at a mile and eighth early in her career, but three of her five wins came at a mile and another one at a mile 16. So I'm a little concerned about the distance. Margaret's segmentation, you know, she's run well fresh, but she was 6-5 in the Endeavor at Tampa last year and came up short. And that race is at least a little bit of a concern. I thought Star Fortress ran such a huge race in the Cardinal last year. She beat a really nice filly in Lovely Princess that day. And then she came back this year and obviously took a lot of money. She went off like 3-1 in the Pegasus World Cup filly, Amer Turf, against a really good field. But, Ruby Nell was third in that race, but she got all banged up going in the first turn, got knocked around, checked, forced to steady, and I think she just spit the bit there. And I think that loss might have been a blessing in disguise, because as well as she ran last fall, I don't mind her needing a race coming back. It was going to be difficult to keep moving forward in every race moving forward with Star Fortress off of that Cardinal. So she gets all banged around, takes a loss last time. Cherie DeVoe has come back and drilled three fast, quick half-mile drills into this Star Fortress. She's going to be a lot tighter. She's going to be she's going to be set for a much improved effort. So I don't know if she's going to be good enough. That's the only question with Elusive Princess and the two Chad Brown fillies. But I'm going to play Star Fortress in the Hillsboro, Steve.
Well, fair enough. This is really a nice group. So
yeah,
looking forward to that.
And then in the Florida Oaks, let me just say, I was a big fan of this number 12, Whit Waters, ran's races last year. She debuted on Tapeta, broke her maiden first time out. And then two starts later, she ran in this Mazarine, this grade three Mazarine Stakes in early November at Woodbine. Got a triple digit late pace number, got a 93 speed rating. That's better than any number any of her rivals have earned in this field. And she drilled a filly in Tripolina that was coming off of a convincing win in the Display Stakes for males over Two Ghosts, who's in the Columbia. Two Ghosts came back and won the grade three gray. He was the best two-year-old Tapeta horse in Canada last year. And you know, Tripolina beat him handily. Tripolina is a nice filly for Kevin Adderd. She was like 2-5 or 1-2 in that race, and Whit Waters ran, beat the crud out of her. And I just thought that was a huge effort. He brought her back, Cassie did. He gave her a shot on dirt last time. She didn't run any good on dirt. But listen, her second dam is Communique, you know, multiple turf graded stakes winner, and second in the Beverly D and placed in another grade one turf race. There's all these turf group graded stakes winners in Whit Waters ran's immediate family. She's going to take the turf no problem, and she's got the tactical speed to make her own trip. And I give her a chance to run big, and she's 8-1, number 12 in the Florida Oaks.
We went over this yesterday as part of our Thoroughgraph segment, and it's just crazy how balanced this group is. And the morning line came out yesterday. One thing that jumped out at us, poolside with Slim at 15-1. And it's a 12-horse field. I mean, I don't think she's going to be 15-1, but she's going to be a price. And to me, she's, you know, competitive with this, with the best of this group. So this is going to be a very, very fun race.
I'll just say this about Astaire. I mean, I'm going to try to beat her. I could be wrong about her, but I thought that Juvenile Fillies didn't come up that deep. That filly that ran second has not come close to hitting a board in a stake race and has been double-digit odds in her next few races. And I thought Astaire was on the best part of the track that day. So, you know, I definitely respect Bill Mott's filly, this Wasisiu, and obviously Chad Brown has a runner in here, but or has two runners in here, but I'm going to give Whit Waters Rand a shot right at a price.
Well, Gary Barber and his, I think, a schoolboy attendee at Whit Waters Rand. That's the origin story. How about the Derby?
Well, to me in the Derby, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know how short Domestic Product is going to be or No More Time, because to me, really, just looking at it from a betting sense, you know, you got those two horses, you got Chip Brown's other horse, Good Money, and you got Pletcher's horse, who is going to be the fourth choice. And it's going to be a big gap, though, between the top two and the rest, potentially. I'll say this about No More Time. I don't like the jock change. I thought the key to that race was Paco Lopez's ride, because the two horses that were putting token pressure on him in the Sam F. Davis, the Shug horse quit going into the far turn, and West Saratoga was done before they straightened into the stretch. So I thought he was just was left on a loose lead in upper stretch. He got tired late, and he was fortunate that a gate road broke slow and was so far back, because I think he would have won that race with a better trip. Domestic Product, you know, I mean, yeah, he could win from off the pace. So, you know, it's hard for me to say anything other than I certainly wasn't wowed by his races too much last year. I'm going to point out a horse I like in here a little bit. It's number one, Hardened. And this is a horse he showed, you know, he ran on the dirt last fall and ran third and didn't do much, but came back on the turf. And I think those two turf races moved him forward, Steve. He ran second at Aqueduct in late October, came back in Gulfstream in January, ran third to In a Jam in Oscar's World, it came right back to win. And then he switched him to dirt last time. And, you know, the pace was real slow in that race. But the way he finished, if you watch the replay of that February 10th allowance, he looks really good in the stretch to me. And I thought it was just a huge, significant move forward off of his previous three races. And I think that's a colt that's moving the right way, progressing right now. And he's got a chance to run well from that inside post with Jose Ortiz. So if anybody's going to beat Domestic Product, I think it's going to be number one, Hardened.
Well, same connections or same, same ownership team as opposed to connections. Same ownership team as Deterministic. I did reach out to Steve Dunker to see if Dunker was gonna be here for Harton, but he's going to the Carolina Duke game. So,
oh my gosh!
not that that's a reflection on Harton's chances.
Doesn't sound too encouraging though. I'll mention real quick. I'm going to mention a couple horses at Turfway, and then I'll give a pick on the Beholder Mile. Race number three at Turfway on Saturday night. It's an allowance race. There's a mare in there called Squash Bottom, the two horse at 6-1 in race three. This is a mare who didn't even get going, really. Her first couple races showed nothing until last fall as a four-year-old, and obviously dropped her way down in class. But she has basically run three winning races in a row. She had an incredibly troubled trip two starts back. Her number numbers hold up to her main rivals in this race, and she just blew them away in this last start. And, you know, I look at this field, the Cox 2-1 morning line favorite is coming off a pair of $30,000 claiming races. Same with Squash Bottom in her last race that she won by 5.5. I think she's moving forward for this Dean Ward. I like number 2 Squash Bottom in race 3. And then the stake race is the $125,000 Big Daddy. It's race number 7. Eyewitness is coming back for Wesley Ward. I don't know if we'll get the 6-1 morning line price, or we probably won't, but I like his chances with Adele Cedillo, number 8 Eyewitness in race 7 at Turfway.
Eyewitness on the outside for Wesley, and that's in the feature. The 7th goes at 8:55, and 2 hours earlier, the that first level allowance, the optional claimer, 6.5 Squash Bottom, the 2, and 6-1.
At Santa Anita, got the Holder Mile, Adair Manor, I think potentially, you know, here's the thing with her. She came back last year from this exact same layoff and ran 2nd at odds on an allowance race. And then she moved forward significantly off the tightener. So she's already shown this pattern where perhaps she's not going to come back with the best race, first race back. You know, maybe she's even, you know, a little better at a mile and a 16th even too. But regardless, I'm going to try to beat her. Green Up is a unraced 2-year-old, ran once at 3, came back last year from a long layoff, Steve, and ran a brilliant race. She ran huge off a layoff last year, won 4 in a row, including a pair of stakes, stepped up in class, ran 4th and 3rd in graded stakes, and then went back to a listed race and blew the doors off them. I think she's got a shot to keep moving forward this season off of an encouraging first year of racing last year. I know she's 5 years old, but she is just getting started, and I give number 3 Green Up a chance to win the Beholder Mile.
Now, the one, which, you know, certainly eligible. The one thing, John, you can't put a pork chop past John White. 3-1.
I know. That blew me away. I mean, now he is sort of saying with that morning line, he's got Adair Manor, both Pletcher Phillies, and the Sweet Azteca right at almost the same price. And I think there's going to be a little bit of variance in there. But, yeah, I was a little disappointed. I mean, I thought she'd be at least double that.
Well, I'm telling you, John. John puts a lot into it. How about a last second Friday push?
All right, race number 7 at Aqueduct today, State Bred Claimant Race. It's got a lot of pace in there. Number 9, Writer's Regret, is going to get the same setup he did last time. His trainer, Alessandro, only winner of the meet. And I'm taking him right back for 2 wins this meet, because I think Riders Regret's going to get the right setup in race 7. I actually just the fact that he is making his 3rd start back this year too, and he's looks like he's coming on a little bit off of that last race. So Riders Regret, number 9 in race 7 today.
Outstanding. The LSFP, the last second Friday push from Scully James, _Scully111. James, good luck to you, and we will talk next
week. Where are you in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks, I will be in New Orleans.
All right. Well, that sounds like a great trip. Steve, best of luck to you. Have a great weekend.
James Scully, everybody. And we got to press on. Just got a nice confirmation from Nick Luck, who will join us next Monday, this coming Monday, for his Cheltenham preview. Looking forward to that. I'm seeing that Steve Carlin is sending me a note, and this is usually bad news about a scratch. because Steve's listening in, and he loves betting James's last second Friday push. So we'll see if that's what Steve's going to tell me. Let's get to Marcus Hirsch, because we're now we're officially behind the eight ball. It's 17 into hour 2. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us with some DRF game plan. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Coming to you from Tampa.
Tampa. Okay. Nice.
got to
from Chicago.
Yes, and by the way, I have not I had not alerted you, but things have worked out, and we will be in New Orleans together in 2 weeks.
Oh, sweet!
All
looking
right.
forward to it.
Well, everyone loves those, you know, Marcus and Nola, you know, live, you know, the atmosphere.
Actually, I might have to stay here for the Hawthorne opening. I just realized.
You've stunned me with that news.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
I think they opened the 20th.
I got to get a hold of Jim Miller. I've been carrying around the press release about you know, the Illinois Derby coming back, and I owe Miller a visit. We can cover that off too, maybe while we're together. Marcus,
23rd.
Yep. Yeah, all right.
First day is 23rd.
Excellent. Thank you for that. A little HAW. Marcus, dive in. Any thoughts about last week? Anything you want to really stuck with you?
I don't remember. lots of scratches.
Yeah, that it was adventurous at Gulfstream.
I like the deterministic.
Yep, everybody. That seems to be the uniform takeaway from the weekend.
I mean, we'll see, but it was a nice step forward, right?
Yeah, yeah. A good way to come back, no doubt.
It's about the only thought I have.
All right, that's fine.
Who do you like in the Tampa Bay Derby? I have no opinion.
I like Chad, obviously, and domestic product. But I want to work. I want to work that Weaver Maiden in at 8-1.
At least 8-1. That's the one that I thought was the only
right.
Really interesting possibility.
I agree.
But
yeah.
He got a bad draw.
This is a funny oval. It might be able. I looked at what was inside of him. Junior and Alvarado is as good as you know, his route riding and his off the pace. You know, I think he can set up shop. You know, midfield. Yeah, I think he can work out a trip.
Where's Paco on Saturday?
Well, that topic has come up a little bit. I'm just going to assume he's where's my Gulfstream quick sheet since you bring that up.
What about Grand Mo the First?
Grand Mo the First is a horse that if you are a deep exotic player, you could put in the bottom rungs.
Maybe more.
Maybe more. You're right. Maybe more. Paco
He should improve at two turns.
Yeah, I don't disagree. In fact, Dave Grenning and I said to Dave last night that Grand Mo was not impossible for
anyway.
Something.
I said I don't have an opinion. My opinion is the favorites are vulnerable. That's my opinion.
Interesting, including domestic product. No more time
Correct.
Is one thing, but all right.
I mean, domestic product is. He's landed in the right spot. If he improves, he's probably going to win. But I'm not that high on the horse personally. But we'll see.
You did like some of the action though at Tampa, including this Florida Oaks that is just fascinating.
Oh, that's a good one, isn't it? That's
yeah,
that's way better. I mean, just deeper and more interesting than this race usually is.
Then dive in.
I like Austere. That's it. Austere really caught my eye because I was doing Kentucky Downs, and all these buyers from Ellis Park, two-year-old turf routes, are super, super low. I would look at adjusting all those, but I don't do the numbers. Anyway, I really liked the way she ran there. I thought she was excellent at Kentucky Downs. Obviously, you know, that's a little bit of a funky course, but I didn't attribute that to the course, really. I just think she's a nice horse. She did manage to work out an absolutely perfect trip in the Juvenile Fillies turf, but I would contend that all the horses that beat her are, you know, would look very good in this spot. And also, I just, you know, I don't think she moved forward quite the way I expected to. Maybe she can't, but I attributed it more toward, you know, just the end of the year, shipping, different kind of course. I think it was a February 4th work that the video is available. And that was a ways back. But even then, I thought she was working really well. I liked her breeze. I think she ought to be a fair price. They got Waskesiu at 8-1. I just noticed that doesn't seem reasonable.
It's going to be hard, though, Marcus. I mean, the price pressure, price elasticity in here is.
I got to look at this. Weigh the Risks, I think, is going to get hammered again.
Well, she's been the lightning rod discussion. Although when these numbers came out yesterday, poolside with Slim at 15-1 seems kooky.
Well, the thing is, you got to make these other horses. Let's see. I didn't see the line. It is a tough line.
You bet it is. with two Chads involved in here, and the Cassies, and you got a lot going on.
I don't think Poolside with Slim will be 15-1, but she might be 10-1.
I agree. I mean, I thought the right price for her was 10-1, maybe 12, but 15.
I like the race, and I like the horse, but I don't see her getting loose. And can she sit behind? That's the question. I really liked Waskesiu's maiden win, but in the end, she got a perfect trip. And while she didn't have a great trip last time, I wanted to see more. I'm not sure there's as much there as I initially thought. Style Points got the dream run of all time in the Swedish Chant. You'd have to rate dynamic pricing above her, I would think. But I'm not that keen on that horse either. 11 hold, not great. Weigh the Risks. I mean, she's going to be, the trainer were Bad Trown, then she'd be the right price. But she was a talking horse at Saratoga, and I know that he was talking up the way she worked. I did see one of her works. It looked good. Maybe she's all that. We shall see, but I'm austere.
All right. You got to take the 4-1. You do get.
She'll be at least 4-1 in my opinion, unless she's just been working better than I even imagined. Also, I mean, it's worth mentioning how good this Hillsborough is too.
Go ahead.
Just top to bottom, I think it's a really good race.
No doubt. But
I couldn't get anywhere in the end. I mean, I don't like Elusive Princess here. I think she wants it. She wants really to go farther than this, and she's kind of one-paced. Star Fortress, I mean, looking at the short comments, you'd think she had an awful trip. She just didn't fire at all last time. And she's got that one race over that funky course, so I don't know quite what to make of her. I don't think Aspen Grove is in the same class as some of these. Fluffy Socks, she's really not a mile and an eighth horse. Market segmentation looks like she could lead, but she's actually not very fast at all. The only horse that really interested me was Sparkle Blue, but I'm not sure she's good enough.
It's a good group and part of a nice sequence. The Tampa Bay Derby, I know some people kind of have looked at it and been ho-hum, but overall.
It is what it is. Yeah. I mean, there just aren't that many horses out there, really.
Well, let's turn our attention to a couple of the other spots, and you focused on fillies and mares in this week's game plan. You looked at the Beholder Mile, which we've talked about with Brad Free already this morning, and one race
Brad
that I
have to say.
What did Brad have to say? Let me go look at my Santa Anita. You're asking the tough questions this morning.
I'm just curious. I didn't read. I did read his advance. It was an excellent advance. It had a lot of information, but I couldn't really tell who he liked in the race.
Sweet Azteca. He says that she's going to control, and that McCarthy was pointing for this. This is not just a brass ring grab. He thinks that Sweet Azteca.
I believe all that. I wish I could have seen any of her works. There wasn't any. There weren't any online since November, but I can't really, I guess I could see it. She's 3-1 on the line. Good Lord. If you take 3-1 on that horse, I think you really need to reassess your approach. I'm just seeing the line for the first time now. Green Up is going to be, what did we had co-favorites here?
right.
Okay, I'm not going to get in trouble with your guy out there, but.
Well, my guy out there is listening, guaranteed. So, if you want to address John directly, here's your chance.
Second choices. Darn Manor 5-2.
Yes.
Green up 3-1. I was hoping to see a bigger number than that. I'm still hoping to see a bigger number than that because she's 5-8, but her big win came in the Catherine Sophia. I would think that people would be. Seeing the number, or they'd be skeptical of her. That's my hope. Because I think that Catherine Sophia was a long time ago, and it was not a bad field, actually. But I think that's more who she is than some of these other races. She's just been real stop and start. I think that her pumpkin pie, Frank's Roquette, is not the same horse in November as she was at her peak, but this mare just blew her way off, very long layoff, going 7/8, which is a little bit short of probably what she wants to do. I think the two-turn mile is absolutely ideal for her. The works, she's a horse that's always caught my eye as having more than it shows on paper. I still think that even at age 5, and though she's had another gap now, if it's not that long gap. She raced November 5th. She went to Florida. I think they had picked out a spot. She started working on December 31st. She's been on an excellent pattern. The video I've seen of her works, and she's worked with Interstate Daydream a couple of times, that was no contest. I'm not saying that the morning is the afternoon. Obviously, it's not. But I just think this mare is working really well, and it's going to get a great trip right behind the two speeds.
All right. Let's go to Oaklawn. I have not talked about the Azari at all, which is my fault.
Well, I mean, gosh, it's just such a different kind of race than it's been recently. The big guns are either retired or just getting started up. So, you know, it's not, there's not the quality of horse that's been in this race. But I do agree with the line to some extent here that I think Hot Sultry will be probably solid. Her Chaluki was like a real tour de force, I thought. But I wonder, she ran well in this race and in the Apple Blossom last year. And she can do it around two turns at a mile and a 16th, but it may not be exactly what she wants to do. We'll see. I don't think Shotgun Hottie is going to be 8-1. I'll say that. But she was my selection here. Maybe she's just a Monmouth horse. You could make that case based on her performances. She ran well in the Monmouth Oaks. She ran her best races of her career there last year. But I think that that may be premature to make that assessment. She clearly needed her last race, and she was just too keen, pulling way too hard the whole time. Got an uncovered trip on the outside, had every right to get tired. I think she's going to be more relaxed, and post-8, I think it's going to be great for her. If she gets back to her best races at Monmouth, I think she'd beat Hutt and Sultry on the square at a much better price. So that's where I went.
Very good.
Well, we'll see.
Norm Cassie. But Norm's been a little quiet this Oaklawn.
And Fairgrounds. I mean, his main string is at Oaklawn, but I mean, you can't win at the clip he was winning at all year. You know,
it's
just ups and downs. It's natural cycles. He looks like, and I haven't followed Oaklawn closely enough. No, but it looks like his horse has been running decently. Like if he switched his first and seconds, it looked like he was having a pretty good meet. But 25 starters there, not that many at Fairgrounds. I think he's like, this is a quiet winter. He's gearing up for the spring, if I had to guess.
Well, we're gearing up for the intense lead up to classic season. Marcus, with the game plan, Daily Racing Form, I appreciate it.
You bet, Steve. Enjoy Tampa. Talk soon.
I will see you soon, too. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. I'm going to take a break here, and we caught up a little bit. We're going to take a break away from the handicapping conversations. We'll come back afterward with Chuck Simon and Barry Spears, Chuck Barry. And we're going to, in between now and then, Mark Guilfoyle is going to join us from HISA. And Mark wants to, I suppose, offer a perspective from the HISA side of things regarding yesterday's discussion that we had with Rusty Arnold. And so, I mean, Mark, longtime you know, racing official, highly respected, the KHRC, and happy to offer him the chance. We'll talk to Mark Guilfoyle when we come back to Tampa, 90 minutes in, 90 to come. Also, Dave Grenning, not far away. In fact, literally 6 feet behind me. And Hammer and Nick Tamaro, too, in this second half of At the Races, the Twin Spires weekend preview. Stay with us.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide a lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late, it's a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.